So we got more than 100 questions leading up to the debate last week, and we just wanted an opportunity to be able to answer some of our viewers and listeners' questions. So thank you so much for coming in today. Really appreciate that. And a lot of them didn't fit the debate format. So here we go. This one is from John. He writes, each of the candidates has unique experiences they claim makes them the most qualified to lead our city. He notes your years on city council and asks, what was your number one accomplishment and how did you make it happen?
Number one accomplishment on the city council. After 16 years of being on the council, there are a lot of things, but I think the thing I'm most proud of is the two-year study that myself and Chris Durbaum and later Tim Mayer joined us on. It was called the Affordable Living Committee. And after 2 years of doing some research and talking to people and industry experts and working with low-income families, we produced a report called Working Hard, Falling Behind. And it was published in 2019. And it capitalized on a lot of issues that are important in this election and all across the country. Affordability, affordable housing, the cost of transportation, the cost of childcare, the cost of food, all of those things are causing people in the community, especially those on limited incomes and low incomes, to really struggle in the community. And so I felt that that was a really good grassroots community-led effort that, again, is one of my proudest achievements.
So Dave asks, the deputy mayor role has been different for different mayors. A consultant study recently suggested that Bloomington could benefit from two deputy mayors. So his question is, what role will the deputy mayor play in your administration? Behind loyalty, what specific skill set or knowledge are you looking for in a deputy mayor? And we're combined Cleo to who will you name as deputy mayor?
Well, that is not something that I am prepared to decide at this point. Anyone who comes out of this primary, of course, is going to have to do some transition work. I think probably the most important issue for my deputy mayor would be not loyalty to me, but a public servant, as I am, and someone who is committed to make sure that all the department heads, that all the employees that are working for the city of Bloomington are well prepared to do their jobs and do them with integrity. And we need to do some rebuilding in City Hall. And with respect to personnel, we do have some morale issues. We do have some very sad departures. And so myself and my deputy mayor are gonna need to do some team building within City Hall to get that public service level up to where I'd like to see it.
Dave wants to know, can you please explain in specific detail how you would address the need to expand housing opportunities so residents don't have to move out of Bloomington?
Well, that's the big question, right? The whole affordability question about housing. I have been very critical of the current Unified Development Ordinance and thinking that we don't have the incentives balanced correctly for the type of housing that the community actually needs. We're seeing all of these multi-story high-rise apartment buildings coming up, and those are rental, and those are not going to be necessarily affordable rental. They'll be market. So I would like to work with some industry professionals, including real estate folks and people in the affordable housing industry, on how do we start developing the kind of housing that people are actually asking for. And those, in my mind, are like homes. It's not that they couldn't be rental homes, but they need to be houses. Maybe townhomes, maybe more of an emphasis on condos even. But that's the type of housing that we need to do better incentivizing with. And I don't see that happening with the current level of our plan.
All right, I'm summarizing this question from an email we received from Bloomington Black Lives Matter. The group is concerned about some of the statements you made in forums. Noted a candidate event April 10th, you stated the violent crime is being done by the big guys that are coming here from Indianapolis, Chicago, other places, selling stuff to the addicted that we're having a hard time with many of our unhoused population. So BLM says the language is racially coded and they want to know if you see that, understand how language can have repercussions outside of their intention.
I do understand that. I understand the sensitivity of the Black Lives Matter individuals who are activists and well they should be. The comment was not intended to be racial in any way, shape, or form. It was actually fact-based. What I was referring to are called source cities. And this is information that I received from our local law enforcement, Chief Dekoff. We've had many conversations about what's driving the violence in our community, what's driving the crime. And he made it very clear that the state police, you know, even national level, will say the source cities where the drugs are coming from, which is primarily the source of the violence, no racial implication at all intended in that comment, are the bigger cities to our north, Chicago, Indianapolis, Detroit, to a lesser degree, St. Louis, Louisville. But these are the cities where the individuals who are selling the drugs that are causing some of our major issues are coming from. And so no disrespect intended to anyone who takes offense to any language like that. There have been other words that I use that they've taken offense to, like civility. And I will stand by that because I operate in a very civil manner when I'm in the public, no matter who I'm addressing. I think it's important not to call people out, not to call people names, but to deal with the issues, deal with the facts.
Michelle emails in, as a queer person of color, there is a lot of performative allyship that graces the lips of people in power and pages of social media. So when we try to hold white leaders accountable for their unintentional to avert racism, we are met with defensiveness, tone policing, to damaging gatekeeping. Can you address her concern?
That's a mouthful. Could you say that again? Because I'm not quite sure I catch the meaning of that question.
So as a queer person of color, a lot of performative allyship that graces the lips of people in power, social media as well, but when they try to hold white leaders accountable, she's saying, it's unintentional to avert, you know, racism, they're met with defensiveness or maybe a tone that's policing to damaging gatekeeping.
Well, and again, I try very hard to keep my tone very, very even. I know we are in very politically explosive environments these days pertaining to race, pertaining to marginalized individuals. So I try very hard to keep my cool when I'm discussing these things. I certainly have individuals in my family who are LGBTQ+. I have a very up close and personal issue with that. And so I think when anyone characterizes me as because I'm a white person, or maybe even an older white person, that I am not in tune, that I am not in touch, or that I get defensive, I would just disagree with that. I don't take offense. I want to try to stay fact-based. I want to try to stay above board in my advocacy. I'm a feminist, right? My early years in activism were all about the late 60s, early 70s, when we were fighting for all kinds of rights, civil rights, women's rights. And as such, I've been an ally for other people who are also feeling like they need to have their voices heard and are not getting a fair shake in our democracy. And so I have great respect for all individuals who are really struggling with voter rights and with LGBTQ+ rights. And obviously the policing issue has come to great national attention, as well as it should. And no, I am not at all defensive about individuals who are using their voices to come forward and say, hey, you know, treat us with the respect that we deserve, because I've been there myself as a female fighting for my own rights.
Kathy writes in, what's your vision for the future of the Bloomington Farmers Market? Having multiple markets doesn't have the same community feel. Never felt the city handled all the disruption in a very positive manner. Do you see a path to continue the markets in a good way for Bloomington?
I do. I was there for the past two Saturdays, and it really does make me sad that the downtown farmers market has seemed to lost a lot of its luster. It's been diminished in many respects. I don't think it's because we have markets elsewhere. I think that's a good thing. I think having the one at the Woolery, I think having them in multiple locations is actually healthy and maybe allows more people from other parts of the city to take advantage of our great farmers markets. But the one downtown does need help. And as mayor, one of the things I want to look at is how can we recruit more vendors back to that market? How do we make it more fun? How do we make it more of a destination point that people will resume that pride? That was such a gem, such a jewel of our community for so many years. So it can be restored, and I will agree that the way things were handled when things started to explode in the farmers market were probably not as ideal as they could have been. But that was then, this is now. We start with where we are and we rebuild the vitality of the farmers market. We can probably do that in a lot of ways. We might make parking free on Saturdays. We might want to reduce the vendors' fees to kind of bring some competition back. There are a number of things that I'm pretty sure we can do to make that destination feel safe, feel secure, and feel once again that welcoming. We want everybody to come to our market and feel comfortable.
Rob wants to know how you would support the fire department. He says our firefighters need raises, the police continue to get all the support, but the fire department is forgotten about. What are you willing to do?
Well, I haven't forgotten about the fire department. I'm very much involved with them right now. It was the Bloomington Police Department that came to us first, and when I say us, the city council. That was not really, that was kind of unprecedented that they would come directly to the council and say, we're not getting anywhere with our collective bargaining. We're having a real hard time with this administration. So typically the city council didn't get involved with any of that until, of course, the collective agreements were made and we just signed off on them. Now we're hearing the same complaints from the fire department that we heard from the police about 3 or 4 years ago. So I actually have a ride along scheduled next week. I actually get to ride with one of the battalions and meet more directly with them. I have had a few breakfast meetings with some of the firefighters. They're coming to us as council members, and we do want to look at them and be very fair, because just like the police, we're going to be losing them to other communities. We already have. Ellisville used their local income tax dollars to increase their firefighters' salaries to the tune of $10,000. So we're losing some of our Bloomington firefighters to them. So kudos to Ellisville. But Bloomington has to step up as well. We do need to pay our safety officers a competitive wage. We need to take a look at their working conditions. And that's something that I'm doing now as a sitting council member. And as mayor, I will do more. And it's not police and fire. It's AFSCME, it's our public works individuals as well. So we gotta pay attention to the people who provide the services that the people of Bloomington pay their taxes for.
The city has formed a 501c3 nonprofit organizations to manage the trades district, Waldron, Buskirk, some others, to move initiative forward, set the city, to move the burden off of some of the city officials. Administration also wanted to use the same mechanism to expand and manage the convention center. Do you agree with that method?
Not particularly. I have more questions than answers about that. This was something that was, I think, pushed through toward the end of this, last year of this mayor's term. I did oppose it when it came up with the convention center expansion, and so I very much voted along with the county council, the commissioners, that the CIB model was the more appropriate way to move, and move fast. We need to move on this convention center. The standoff has been, I think, very counterproductive. With respect to the formation, I was hoping that we could get two more city council appointments on that board to have a little bit more fair representation between, who's going to manage this 501c3 with regard to the Hopewell, which I agree needs some additional help. That's a big deal. I disagreed with the Waldron and the Buskirk. I think those are public assets that I think the city needs to hang on to. Those are part of our brand, the arts, and I want to make sure that there are people making decisions about those two venues that know the arts community, and will do a fair job in managing that vital asset. Trades District, I'm understanding now, is probably less of a focus because John Fernandez, of course, is now in charge along with Pat East, and that seems to be the direction. They're in good hands. They know what to do to develop out that Trades District. But yeah, I'd love to see a little bit more hands off the arts. Maybe more of a focus on the real estate and how the Hopewell neighborhood is going to develop.
Ann wants to know, what do you think about the traffic closure of the 500 block of East Kirkwood Avenue ruling and the restaurants using the public streets for 6 months of the year to possible detriment of other types of businesses?
That was a very robust discussion. We just had it. I did vote in favor of expanding for this particular summer season. I think we are still in a post-COVID era, even though it seems to be in the rearview mirror, the worst of it anyway. And I think maybe one more summer would be a nice gift to the restaurants, who certainly can benefit from that. But I'm very well aware that there are winners here and losers here. And some of the losers, of course, are the people that really can't expand out into the streets, like the retail shops, the offices above. Some of the churches in the downtown have certainly complained about it. So I'm not sure I'm in favor of a permanent closure of it. I think it was a good mechanism for the COVID era, but we might want to make sure that Kirkwood is a street that is usable by all users. And I mean that across the board. I think we were getting a little bit too restrictive and making everything all about bikes, maybe making everything all about pedestrians. But still, emergency vehicles need to have access. The stores who need their loading and loadouts for their merchandise. We don't want to close streets willy-nilly without thinking about the unintended consequences, who wins and then who loses.
Donald writes in about some low-hanging quality of life issues that he'd like to see the next mayor tackle. So stances on banning app-based scooters and bikes, banning off-highway gas engines like leaf blowers and lawnmowers, and then requiring porous parking lot surfaces. Three things there.
Okay, now the question again, start over, what is his basic premise as to quality of life issues?
Quality of life, okay. Yeah. Correct. And his first one is banning app-based scooters and
banning.
E-bikes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Banning. Okay. Yeah, three things there.
Yeah.
I think with regard to our climate action plan and our concern about those gas-powered, anything that's gas-powered, I do think we need to take a hard look at that and see how difficult it might be to transition people away from the gas blowers, maybe into the more electric. I think that is definitely something we should look at and not be hypocritical about. If we do want to reduce our carbon footprint, that might be a way. And it's also not just the gas, it's the noise. I know a lot of people are complaining about the noxious fumes and the noise, and could maybe, short of a ban, could we maybe just limit the times that they're in use until they can maybe be phased out in lieu of other equipment that's less damaging to the climate. With respect to scooters, I'm on the record. I'm not a fan. I think we need to be much, much harder on the scooter companies themselves and hold them more responsible for the ADA compliance issues that we're really struggling with. I'm very, very big on making sure our streets, our sidewalks, our intersections are usable for all ages, all abilities, all disabilities. And so the scooters have caused a major issue on our sidewalks that I'm not sure the current administration's plan is going to necessarily eliminate all of that. And so I would definitely take a look at what do we do to make sure that our sidewalks are not blocked and people who have, you know, disabilities are really struggling in our downtown and elsewhere. It's all over the city. So what was the one in the middle?
Requiring porous parking lot surfaces.
Porous parking lot surfaces. Well, again, that is ideal with regard to impervious surfaces. I'm a little bit sad about the loss of our green spaces, which are, of course, better than any kind of surface. Impervious surfaces are not perfect with respect to, you know, being able to do snow removal and all that kind of issue. With anything you do that's in the positive column, there's always going to be a negative that you have to look at. But yes, we definitely need to be mindful of that with regard to flooding issues. So impervious surfaces, obviously, good way to go there.
Colby's question for you is, why won't the city of Bloomington let new companies and new jobs come to the city? So perhaps you can just expand on that, talk about what you've done on council and what you would do as mayor to help bring more jobs to the city.
And we're not letting companies come to the city?
That's his question. Yeah.
Well, I would first of all disagree with the basic question, because I am very much in favor of the efforts that the Chamber of Commerce makes on behalf of advocacy for their small business community. I'm very much in favor of the BEDC. That is their job. That is their mission, to recruit new businesses into the community. We want that. We certainly encourage more jobs that are paying better wages. So I am not opposed to new business coming to Bloomington at all. The Fullerton parcel that we recently said was not appropriate for a jail site is because that is reserved for a major employment attractor. That has been zoned to someone big, like a cook, or that's property that's more suitable for that kind of a big, basic sector employer to come in. So to the extent that we have the tools at the city level, we have very few. I mean, we have tax abatements. We can certainly incentivize through the Unified Development Ordinance, but I am certainly not opposed to any new businesses coming to town. And we want to maintain the businesses that we already have, so it is a recruiting and a retention effort that the City of Bloomington needs to partner with all of our small business and large business community.
Victoria wants to know, some of the nicest neighborhoods in Bloomington evolved within a racist, classist Bloomington. So what would you do to diversify these neighborhoods, make it available to more people while preserving its quality?
Well, again, the basic question there I would have a disagreement with. I know this issue you're talking about, the days of redlining and racist policies, those no longer exist here in the City of Bloomington. I can say that with great authority. The whole issue about densifying the core neighborhoods, which I opposed very, very loudly, had nothing to do with wanting to keep those communities exclusive. It was to protect those houses that I think are under threat. These are neighborhoods that are already dense, they're already diverse, and I didn't see that changing our rules to allow duplexing was going to do anything at all to either make those homes more affordable or more accessible. So the basic question, I think I have to, I'm not dismissing it out of hand. I know that that was certainly an issue. Most cities in the United States had very racist policies with regard to real estate, and gladly we are, I think, beyond those times. And if there are relics of that, I'm certainly not seeing them. The Bloomington is a welcoming place. Those neighborhoods who opposed upzonings are welcoming neighbors. There's nothing exclusive about that in my experience.
All right. Casey wants to know how you would handle the drug crisis without punitive action for those suffering from addiction. Will you plan on any drug decriminalization efforts?
Well, drug decriminalization, I don't know that that is in the hands of the City of Bloomington. I mean, that's a federal issue, right, as to what are crimes and what kinds of drugs are the dangerous narcotics. What they may be referring to are decriminalizing the use of some of the drugs that are lesser damaging, such as marijuana. With respect to, again, and I've mentioned those source cities where some of the more damaging narcotics are coming from, they are damaging. I mean, we're talking about the synthetic meth that's now being made very cheaply by the cartels. We're talking about an uptick in heroin. We're talking about, cocaine is not maybe the drug of choice so much now, but that certainly has been an issue. And of course, the opioid crisis. We're getting opioid settlement money because of the damaging drug that is. So I am not for decriminalizing those dangerous drugs, because I think they are causing some real serious problems with addictions in our community. These are things that I would like to address locally by having better mental health services, better addiction services, better recovery services, because my goal would be to get the people off the stuff. There's a market for it, and in with respect to other drugs that are coming here from the source cities, there's the party drugs that we have a campus in the middle of our city. So there's a market for these drugs, and with the market for these drugs comes the people who are here to sell them, which is also increasing, unfortunately, and I'm hearing this again from our law enforcement officials, that's causing an uptick in the gun violence that we're seeing in the community. You know, as we were just having our WFIU-TIU debate, there was another shooting happening that very evening, another shooting. We don't know what the origin of that is, still under investigation, but there have been far too many of those drive-bys that we suspect are probably drug-related or somehow connected to crime that's coming to our community from outside of the community, because there is a market for these dangerous narcotics.
All right, last question. Nissy emails in, what would you do as mayor to deal with the deer problem?
The deer problem, that's a good question. Of course, my colleague Dave Rollo, and before him when Andy Ruff was on the council, we struggled very mightily with the deer task force. And of course, that had to do with the biodiversity of Griffey and the understory there. And so that was controversial, but I did support the ability to do culling there. Now, that is not going to take care of the urban deer problem in the neighborhood. Those deer do not belong in an urban environment. It's not good for their health. It's not good for the health of the community. And so my position is we need to take a look at what's available now. And my understanding is there are methods of birth control that are actually could be quite effective. And I would be for that because, as you know, we are not allowed to have any kind of cull in a city, no gun fire. And so that's not an effective means. But I'm also in support of having a wildlife management team. And I know that our animal care and control is talking to us about that to kind of take the lead in that to see what we might do to, we don't want to eliminate deer altogether, but we definitely want their populations to be under control to where people can garden in their backyards. People are not going to be affected by deer tick or any diseases, Lyme disease. It is a public health issue in my mind, and it is a nuisance for many, many people I know. So we do need to do something, and it might cost some money, and we may need to allocate some for that effort. But I do think deer population has gotten to a point where we need to take some action.
Thank you so much for coming in today. I know you're busy, but really appreciate you answering these questions from our listeners and viewers. Thank you.
Thank you. My pleasure.